Welcome to another edition of the Forest Grove United Church of Christ podcast. In today's podcast, we'll explore the powerful role faith communities play in promoting public health. I'm your host, Philip Dungan, and today we have the privilege to talk with our exceptional guest, Adrian Klein. Adrian brings a wealth of knowledge and an unwavering passion for public health. As a learning community coordinator at Forest Grove United Church of Christ, she spearheads impactful programs and fosters collaboration within the field, aiming to create lasting change. With a deep understanding of the complexities surrounding public health issues, Adrian Klein is a dedicated advocate for promoting health equity and improving overall well-being. Adrian has a degree in public health from Southern New Hampshire University and has been a longtime advocate for underserved communities, providing them with better health outcomes and opportunities. Public health challenges are multifaceted, affecting individuals and communities in diverse ways. Faith communities have long been at the forefront of addressing these challenges, utilizing their influence, resources, and compassion to make positive impact. Today, we'll delve into the responsibilities of the faith community in public health and explore the incredible work being done in this realm. Adrian Klein will share her experiences and insights on addressing health disparities through faith-based initiatives. We'll uncover inspiring examples of programs that have successfully improved health outcomes in marginalized communities, breaking down barriers to healthcare access and providing comprehensive support. Education and advocacy are crucial components of public health, and we'll explore how faith communities play a pivotal role in raising awareness about prevalent health issues. Adrian will shed light on the power of education and discuss the importance of faith leaders in advocating for policies that prioritize public health and promote positive change. Let's listen. Well, welcome back to the Forest Grove United Church of Christ podcast. I am joined today by Adrian Klein, and we are going to talk about bridging the gap, the faith community's role in public health. And I think it's a really important topic, very timely, of course. And I'm excited to look at this subject with you. So welcome, Adrian.
Fabulous. Thank you for having me.
Before we start, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do?
Well, currently I am the Learning Community Coordinator for the Forest Grove United Church of Christ, and I have just completed my degree in public health. I've been the Learning Community Coordinator for about a year now, and I've had the great pleasure of working with a couple of initiatives around here. And also just getting my feet wet with how to increase awareness of social justice within our own community.
Excellent. And I think a key component of social justice is obviously public health. And as we're going to kind of dive in today and kind of explore what a faith community could do to impact that, how do you see maybe in just a broad sense the role of the faith community in terms of public health?
The role of the faith community in public health is huge, and it, I think, is often overlooked. But the faith community can be that bridge between those populations that have limited access to healthcare for several reasons. With the faith community, there is a level of trust within underserved communities that the faith communities can utilize to progress forward just healthy lifestyles for their communities.
I think sometimes when the subject maybe is brought up, what can a faith community do in terms of public health? And sometimes faith communities probably don't realize that maybe they, at least on some level, are already doing some things, not that they can't or shouldn't do more, but things like feeding the homeless, clothing the homeless, those kind of outreaches. Maybe they provide a shelter, like our church for a long time was a homeless shelter, an emergency homeless shelter. Those things are public health or addressing public health issues too, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. That's the amazing thing about the faith community is that there can be many different branches that help individuals within the community, get the care that they need. Like you said, with the homeless shelter, the FGUCC ran the homeless shelter, I think, for a couple of years. It actually changed locations by the time I was on board there. But the other things that they can do are actually pretty powerful. You know, they can provide healthcare services. Many faith communities actively engage in providing healthcare services, particularly to the underserved populations. They may establish free clinics, health centers, or they may partner with medical professionals to offer screenings, vaccinations, and even preventative care to those who lack the access to healthcare, which is a huge problem nationwide. So yeah, these initiatives aim, you know, they can bridge the gap in the healthcare disparities and help ensure that everyone has the opportunity to receive essential medical services. I did quite a bit of research in my undergrad about using the faith communities to get these healthcare services to Black communities, to the Latinx communities. There's a lot of reasons, socioeconomic reasons, why these populations don't receive healthcare the same as their white counterparts. And a lot of that has to do with just the way that our whole system is set up. We do still experience quite strong systemic racism and systemic inequality, and churches can really create that connection so that these communities are not being overlooked.
Yeah, that's excellent. I think you bring up a great point there. It's kind of interesting too, when you look at even some health organizations, several of them, the one at least, maybe I shouldn't say several, but I know of one major health organization here in the Pacific Northwest, Providence. That's kind of how they began, as like an outreach to serving the health needs of the communities that they were in. A religious organization, the Sisters of Providence, mm-hmm. And they were ministering medical treatment for people, and have now become, you know, pretty large, at least regional health system within the Pacific Northwest. And that's to say that every church is going to become a health plan and a health system at some point. But like you said, being able to maybe bridge some of those gaps where there's inequality. The equity is not the same as it is in maybe affluent, specifically Anglo-Saxon communities that have better access to care. What are some of the specific things? You said you did some studies as you're doing your schooling. What are some specific ways that a faith organization can really partner maybe with even a Providence Healthcare or some other health-based organization to serve some of those communities?
One of the programs that I was really excited to engage in was coming up with a way to work with the Latinx communities that have a higher prevalence of developing prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. And how do we take a community that sometimes, more often than not, has limited access to healthcare? There's also language barriers. There's also the trust issue. Latinx communities studies show trust their church and their church leaders more than they do the healthcare system in the United States. So this presented a really unique platform to provide services to the Latinx communities. So the program was about partnering with local providers, like you're talking about, like with Providence, and creating a program where individuals who are at risk for prediabetes or type 2 diabetes to come into their own church where they're very comfortable, and perhaps they were even invited by their own priest or pastor, someone that they trust, a community leader that they trust, to come in weekly and meet with a diabetes educator to get their A1C levels checked. If anyone knows what that is, it's just basically seeing if your blood sugars are high enough to show that you are either pre-diabetic or have type 2 diabetes. Essentially, help them to understand how to either prevent or to maintain type 2 diabetes using language that they understand, and also creating a community within itself, right? You know, everyone's coming in for this Monday night educational series, and that creates a community there in itself, and run that for about 8 weeks, you know, once a week, and test them on their health literacy and how much they know at the end of the program versus the beginning of the program, and also checking their A1C levels and seeing how much the increase in health literacy has been able to in order to change their blood glucose levels.
Yeah, that seems such a natural way to help treat or inform people of a certain, if they have a certain diagnosis or maybe are at high risk of a certain diagnosis, to a place that they probably feel comfortable with. I know a lot of people might have a lot of anxiety going into a medical clinic or a hospital for testing, but if they can go to a local community, a church or temple, and be able to get some of that care and get some of that information, it just seems like the setting in and of itself would really enable a more relaxing, more maybe safe environment for them to learn, where they might be intimidated if they had to go to a medical clinic. And especially if there's people there, like a pastor and maybe different people that are in the ministry that can help communicate that information more effectively to them.
Yeah, imagine if you were in this country and it's not your home country, and also English is not your first language, and navigating our healthcare system is a nightmare if you are of, you know, United States birth and English is your first language. So imagine if you are not, and the overwhelming scariness, yeah, it's frightening to try and go into this sterile situation where you know no one and they may not speak your language. The chances of getting someone through that door are a lot lower than if it was set up within their own church where they have been going every week, and they have created already a community within their church. They're going to know people. They're going to trust people. They're going to trust their pastor or their priest. It's a much safer situation for them.
Yeah, that's really exciting that's a role faith communities can really play. The other point that you mentioned that I think is really crucial is the idea of health literacy. And I have this quote from the World Health Organization, and I'll read it, and I'd just like to kind of get what your input is on it. Health literacy is a stronger predictor of an individual's health status than income, employment status, education, and racial or ethnic group. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it hits the nail on the head, because even just take other socioeconomic factors out of that, and including race. If you cannot understand what is being talked to you about with your own health condition, then the chances of you being able to effectively get treated or to maintain that condition for healthy outcomes is low. You know, if just imagine yourself sitting in your doctor's office and they say, well, I'm going to diagnose you with type 2 diabetes. Here's your insulin. We'll see you in 2 weeks, right? If you don't have health literacy, you don't know what questions to ask. You don't know how to understand the information that's being disseminated to you. You are going to be lost. With any luck, maybe you can go home and Google, you know, search on the internet for information, but that's assuming you have access to the internet. Right. So yeah, health literacy is huge. And there's quite a lot of initiatives that are out there that are working to combat it. But if you don't understand health literacy, you're not going to be able to take care of yourself or your family members very well.
Yeah. And I was looking at some statistics from the CDC on diabetes specifically. And this is a time period from 2017 to 2022, or excuse me, 2020. And in the Hispanic community, there's a 15.5% 15.5% of the population has a diabetes diagnosis, which it's really kind of incredible when you think that, you know, it seems to me such a high percentage. And I'm wondering, because health literacy is such an important aspect of our health, according to the World Health Organization, that how many people are being undiagnosed because don't understand that they have the opportunity maybe for treatment, or understand, or that access to treatment.
Yeah, as soon as you said that statistic, I was like, yeah, but those are the ones that actually got diagnosed. How many are not being diagnosed because of health literacy, because of access to care, and just not understanding that they might be more at risk than other populations?
Yeah, it's really an interesting kind of phenomenon that I think, obviously, access to care and health literacy are really intertwined, in that when we get a percentage like 15% of the population, or 15% of a subset of the population, has a certain disease, it's really hard to quantify that in a lot of ways, because there's probably potentially millions of people that are undiagnosed in that community. And the rate might be, quite a bit higher. I know personally, as a data analyst, I did a study when I was working for a health plan on obesity. And in that study, we found out that obesity was being underdiagnosed based on national averages in our communities. And the health plan that I worked with then did a major education program for their physicians and healthcare workers to make sure that they are accurately producing the right diagnoses for patients. And I think, obviously, even with something like diabetes, if they're not getting care, if they have no access to care or understand that they might be high risk, and that's that health literacy piece again, it can really lower what those numbers are, even though they seem high.
And also not just with chronic diseases, we have numbers and statistics from the CDC just with the COVID pandemic that we went through, or still going through. But so the CDC says that Black and Latino individuals in the U.S. are three times more likely than the white individuals to be hospitalized for COVID-19 and twice as likely to die from the disease. However, the Black and Latino individuals account for only 25% of the 184 million people in the U.S. who received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. So it's not just chronic diseases. It's also this immediate care that is needed during a pandemic.
Right. So that access to care, the ability to have immediate care when either sick or potentially to be sick, like obviously the immunizations for COVID were, obviously people could have gotten it and then got the immunization, but it was also supposed to be preventative. And if they don't have access to the preventative care from something like that, and that could also, obviously, you could, expand that out to influenza, COVID, any other kind of immunization.
All the vaccines.
Yeah, all the different vaccines that you could get or potentially are able to get, if they don't have access to that or know where to get access to that, because maybe there is something in their community, and they just, again, that talks about the health literacy in terms of, where can I go to get healthcare?
Also, a huge part of that is, and we all saw it, is trust in the vaccine. So our faith communities could bridge that gap by providing COVID-19 vaccine clinics in their churches. So that's another area where that bridge can be built.
And I do want to say, in the statistics I was looking at, the CDC, they did attempt to adjust for the potential of undiagnosed in diabetes. What's interesting is their adjusted percentage is actually really high. They think undiagnosed diabetes is almost around 4%. It's close to 4% of the population is undiagnosed. So, that would be, if you just extrapolate that out, to the Hispanic community, for instance, or Latinx community, That's, you know, 19% of their population, and that's almost a fifth of their entire population that really probably does have a diabetes or should have a diabetes diagnosis.
Yes, correct.
So bridging that gap, the faith community, do a lot of health plans or health organizations attempt to outreach to faith communities to get them involved? Is that something new? Is it something that's growing?
There's a lot of good research lately, especially because we have the data from things like the diabetes and also from COVID-19, where they're saying, really, we should start running these initiatives through their faith communities. And there's quite a lot of new and current research being done that's quite exciting. And it really is showing that there is more buy-in when we are utilizing the faith community to provide these services. I don't know of any specific health plan provider that is doing it. The research is usually being done, you know, with scientists and other public health professionals, where they're just setting up this research to see how the outcomes play and to see if that's something that could be utilized in the future by a health plan.
What's kind of interesting with this too, and I think we could probably talk on this one subject for so long, but there definitely are other issues too, and especially in regards to how a faith community can really create a positive impact for health outcomes. And one of those is mental health and the stigma that people have and still have when somebody has a mental health event or a mental health condition, or even a diagnosis, and how can the faith community really maybe bridge or help eliminate that stigma? You know, I know just obviously a lot of faith communities offer some sort of lay counseling that can be very effective for people that are maybe dealing with mental health trauma. But what are some other things that you think of when you think how the faith community can bridge that gap or help reduce that stigma?
Yeah, faith communities have the potential to foster mental health support networks and reduce stigma surrounding mental illness. They can do this by creating safe spaces for individuals to discuss mental health challenges. They can offer the counseling services and collaborate with other mental health professionals. Faith leaders can play a pivotal role in reducing stigma by addressing misconceptions and emphasizing the importance of seeking professional help and promoting understanding and acceptance within their communities. And I think that's really the key part too, is like the promoting the understanding and acceptance within the communities, because it's not just one person who's dealing with the mental health that needs to essentially eliminate stigma, but it's the entire community, you know, around that person. We all need to shake the stigma.
Agreed. And I think too, sometimes I feel like the religious community, they feel a need, and I've probably been guilty of this myself, when somebody is maybe dealing with some, even if it's a kind of a low level mental health issue, tell them to pray. You know, I'll pray for you.
Right.
You know, I'll pray with you. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but sometimes there needs to be more than just that.
Yeah, I mean, praying, great. That's one level of the onion that is mental health. And yes, it shouldn't be ignored, but it isn't the only element that is going to help someone deal with their mental health issues. It does have to be more robust than that. Counseling services, referring out to mental health professionals. And again, it's the faith leader's responsibility to reduce that stigma. So they really need to be educating their own congregation about promoting and understanding mental health issues and dropping the stigma.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely ministries out there that a lot of different faith communities are engaging in. We have a ministry that doesn't just deal with mental issues or counseling, but you know, can include a lot of different things. But like the Stevens Ministry in our own faith community does a lot of, I think, things that are very proactive in ministering to people. And I think having even lay leaders that are trained in at least basic counseling can be very powerful and really enhance a faith community ability to minister to those people that are having, you know, mental issues of some sort.
Yeah, absolutely. We obviously, the Forest Grove UCC is pretty progressive in their thoughts about mental health and getting the resources and the help that individuals need for mental health. Our Stevens ministry is wonderful, fabulous. And, you know, like you had mentioned before, they're not just going to show up and just pray with you. They are going to be those faith leaders that can help you overcome the challenges that you are feeling to get the help that you need and to be a support for them. So I don't know what other churches do, but I am very proud of what we do to help individuals overcome those things.
Yeah, and I think it's important. And obviously, some churches are going to have resources might be quite a bit different. If you're in a smaller faith community, they might not be able to, you know, have a pastor or religious leader that has training. So sometimes you have to be maybe a little bit more creative or partner with other local groups that might have those resources. But I know even in another church that I worked with for quite some time, we did eventually have one of the church staff who was actually a licensed counselor on staff just for those kind of needs and for the needs of the congregation. And again, I know that's not possible for every faith community, but if faith communities do have the resources available, I think that would be such a powerful way to help reduce that stigma, as well as just give people more options. Because again, the setting of the church, you know, where or their temple, where they go to worship might be help reduce a lot of the anxiety of being able to seek help.
Yeah, it's their safe space.
So do you have any other suggestions and ways that the faith community can really help bridge that mental health stigma, as well as help encourage people to get treatment for mental health?
Well, I mean, it could even go farther as to have faith communities help foster change in policy and healthcare policy too. They can advocate for systemic changes. They can contribute to long-term solutions for these health disparities by helping to create and implement public policy discussions and change. And that way we can help improve those social determinants of health. We can get a more fair distribution of resources and education out into the community.
Definitely. I think it kind of even goes in with what we talked about a few weeks ago on civility. There are issues of justice, and this is really a social justice issue, not just a public health issue, that as a faith community, we need to stand for change and positive change.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, I think, why are we even here? Because we really are here for the people and taking care of our communities. And that's one of the elements that I love so much about Forest Grove UCC, is that really has been a banner that we have picked up and that we are walking with, hopefully very loud, to create equality and equity within our own community.
Agreed. And I think maybe the closing thought that I would like maybe to talk about is, obviously we're really highlighting the role of what a faith community would hopefully do as a partner with public health and an advocate for public health. But there are people that don't feel comfortable in a faith community. And if their area has some kind of health initiative, whether it be on diabetes or mental health, like we discussed today, how do we make those places a place where somebody that maybe doesn't have a faith or doesn't share that faith would feel safe to go there?
That is a really, really great question, because there are people who have had a religious trauma and they don't want it to have anything to do with the church or quote unquote religion or their own faith community. But that's the beauty of these initiatives, is they don't necessarily have to be in a church because they're not going to be driven by a faith leader. They're going to be driven more by the actual health plan or health promotion behind it. So the beauty is that these initiatives can happen anywhere within a community and not necessarily on church grounds. So while we know it works well here, we can also say that this program can actually transfer quite well to the library, and it can be promoted not under any kind of church or religious banner. It can just say, hey, here's our promotion, here's our program, we would love for you to join us. And it can be in a very, what that person might consider a neutral place, like library or community center or something like that. So it's a program that can be transferable, I think, through many different venues.
Yeah, and that you bring up some excellent points, because I think that would also help reduce the stigma of a program. Because I imagine some people, because of past trauma or oppression from religion, they might feel like, is this going to be an evangelical exercise to somehow convert me?
Yeah, exactly. Like, are they just going to try to convert me and go to my church to get me to go to their church? And yeah, that would be very off-putting. So I think that a program that can help foster these, you know, changes in the way people view health and health access and health literacy can be done in any place.
Agreed. And maybe and I think I said that the other one was the closing thought, but I thought of something else.
Okay. Okay.
If somebody's listening and they're in a faith community that maybe is not advocating, how do they go about maybe trying to encourage their faith community to advocate?
I would recommend speaking to their faith leader, whether it be the priest or the pastor. And I would take some research with you. Like I said, there's some really exciting and new research coming out, and that you can sit down with your faith leader and say, hey, I think we really should do this. This is how I think we should move forward. I see that there's this need in our own, you know, church community. And I think that we could really support some amazing change.
Absolutely.
It's our responsibility to take care of our community, and we should be doing everything possible to do that.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform so you don't miss an episode. You can find more information about Forest Grove United Church of Christ at www.fgucc.org, or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok. We'd love to hear what you think about the show, so please email us at podcast@fgucc.org with your thoughts, questions, or suggestions for upcoming podcasts. Until next time.